Next presentation, directed sampling using CotMan to improve late season decision making in spatially variable cotton fields. I'm the presenter, Tina Gray Teague from Arkansas State University, University of Arkansas Agricultural Experiment Station in Jonesboro. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, Keith Morris, who's an ag engineer at Arkansas State and does spatial technology for us, and Diana Danforth, a statistician, SAS guru, COTMAM, at the University of Arkansas, ag economics at Fayetteville. I'm going to focus my presentation on end-of-season decision-making, on essentially when to quit, and how, the challenges that we have in variable fields of defining that last effective bull population, the last bulls that are going to make us money, and then making decisions on to terminate insect control. We have, in the fields that I work in Northeast Arkansas, we have a lot of spatial variability, so sometimes it's challenging to make decisions on where to sample and make those determinations on cutout. Spatial differences, spatial variability across the field associated with soils, elevation, drainage, landscape features, these all can affect the phenological stages in cotton. And what I'm really interested in is that cutout date, which we define as the flowering date of the last effective bull population. We have opportunities in precision IPM to use new technologies to better focus our insect control and insect management. I pulled up this slide from an old talk because I'm looking at the progress that I had been made, and it was, oh my goodness, it was a 2003 Beltwide where I used this. So that 10 years ago, I made this statement. Well, I was so excited about new technologies and opportunities with NDVI and still, we are using broadcast sprays and not in the Mid-South and not using this technology and to focus and do this precision IPM. So a couple of years ago, I started thinking about what simple steps should we be using until we get really good sensors and to do these things for us. And go back to a slide from back in the good old days with InTime and NDVI, and this was 2004 slide, and we had seven different classifications that we were going to have management, and they're associated with different things. So, and use zone management, and I thought there was great potential for this, and I still do, but it was awfully complicated with those seven biomass classifications and sampling and allocations across. Because to allocate time if you're in your office and looking at a computer screen, it's really easy to allocate sample time and say, well, you need 7 or 20 zones to sample. But if you're walking across the field and making those, it's very difficult. There has to be economic, social, or environmental benefits of zone management. And in the real world, we need to think about if it's management worthy. Is there significant yield potential differences for these zones? Are they a large enough crop area that if when we make a decision and does our management tools that we're using, a sprayer or a planter, are they big enough to do that? And it needs to be a predictable spatial pattern. If we look at these big fields that I work in Northeast Arkansas, the big center pivot fields in the Mid-South, we plant border to border. In the West, they'll just plant under the irrigated circle, but we plant the whole fields in Arkansas. So what about this simple approach, irrigated and rain-fed management zones? This in 150 acre field that you might have 10 to 20 acres that are not irrigated. So this is an easy to set up zone. There's no fancy sensors required. It's simple, wet or dry. I think it's zone worthy. It's a large area. It's a predictable pattern, and there are yield potential differences amongst irrigated and non-irrigated. Is it worth our management time? Well, the producers in Northeast Arkansas, progressive producers, are now starting to use this approach with their seeding rates and their fertilizer. They're managing these irrigated and non-irrigated areas of management zones differently, and I think we can do this with insects as well. One thing we do know about in Arkansas, as we've been working on it a long time, is end-of-season management, this when-to-quit strategy on insect control. The research started on when I was a graduate student back in the 70s, John Bernhardt, Jael Phillips, Phil Tugwell, just tons of people devoted decades to this kind of work on when to quit. We identify the flowering date, the last effective bull population, and we track heat units. It was validated for years with the boll weevil and boll worm. We have rules for Lycus linearis. So identify that last bull population makes money, add 250 heat units, and quit. We know when to quit in Arkansas. We've got new versions of CopMan that allow us to geo-reference our samples and go back to the same places. So this is a potential to move from field-level management to site-specific management. We've got rain-fed. In this experiment that I'm going to talk about, sampling was inside and outside the pivot irrigated pivot zones. I used 6 fields over 2 years on the Wildy Farms and monitored those. And I'll talk a little bit about CopMan. I'm going to compare the growth inside and outside the pivot. And so you need to know what my standards are. And this is the CopMan curves based on the main stem nodal development. We like to see that first fruiting branch, the first squaring node at 35 days after planting, one square. In 25 days, that square will be a flower, and we would like to have developed 9 nodes above that white flower by 60 days after planting, 9 total scoring nodes. We want to have fill those bowls and slow down growth enough so that we're at 5 scoring nodes, 5 nodes above white flower by 80 days. If you graph those scoring nodes, you get this kind of target development curve, and so we compare our regular growth to that curve. So here's some irrigated and rain-fed plants in 2012. There's the target development curve. There's the growth of the irrigated plants. Follows that curve very nicely. I had 9 nodes above white flower in those samples. Here's the rain-fed plants. I only had 6. Totally, very, very different looking growth curves. What do those plants at that apogee look like? This is the yield potential difference. Notable white flower 9 plant, very, very different in yield potential. It's on target for early and high yields. That pre-flower water deficit stress that I saw this year in Arkansas, this kind of little squatty plant, and it's, in my experience in research, lots and lots of years of research, we do not compensate in Arkansas this kind of deficits. Even as long as you want to go, we're not going to compensate for that kind of stress. These are the curves I got in 2011, big differences between the rain-fed and irrigated curves, and these are 2012 curves. How do those look as far as my yield potential? This is yields among those rain-fed corners and irrigated circles. About a 500-pound difference, 738 versus 1,200. What about indifferences in days of cutout in those irrigated and rain-fed? This is going back to that field that I'm going to use several times, field 61. This year we reached cutout 85 days after planting, and in irrigated plants, and 62 days after planting into dry land. Across those 6 fields in 2012, 2 to 3 week differences in cutout dates between irrigated and so these are very, very well-defined spatial differences. Over 2 years, there was about a 14-day difference in cutout date, maturity differences between these two management zones. So how does that affect plant bugs? We monitored each of those sites. I monitored plant bugs season long. In 2011, they were really, really low numbers, never exceeded action level. So not any opportunities for an entomologist in 2011. But in 2012, this one field I keep talking about it was a great research opportunity. I got plant bugs late. They came in 1st of August. The numbers exceeded the recommended thresholds, and so the crop advisor at Wildy Farms started to recommend sprays out there. So we set up a test. Where was I out here at August 1st? It was 110 heat units after cutout on my irrigated, and it was my rain fed was at 650 heat units, well past the final stage of crop susceptibility. So in zone management, we would want to protect susceptible plants, but we're not going to waste costly insecticides where plants are past that endpoint for crop susceptibility. We set up a test, a zone termination test. This was across a half-mile pivot field. I had 3 treatments. Broadcast, blanketed across the whole field. Zone, we only sprayed the rain-fed areas were not sprayed, and a check where we didn't use any insecticide. And we did lots of plant and insect monitoring in these points through the season. So let's look at what the insects were. First of all, this is my pre-treatment counts one day before on August 1st. We were barely, rain-fed. There weren't any insects in there, zeros and ones. But in the irrigated, just in the check, we're barely at threshold. But look what happened about August 11th. They kind of exploded numbers. These are all nymphs. It's all nymphs. We're getting about 30 plant bug nymphs per drop. Let's look at the other treatment. So the broadcast, at that same time, the application, it was a Brigade and Bidrin application with the sprayer. Maintain those numbers that we didn't see that explosion in nymphs there at the end. The rain-fed plots were still all zeros, and it didn't matter with our zeros and ones in broadcast versus the zone. And the zone, we were able to control those. So that August 11th time when we had when we saw the nymphs that had really come on, that late season explosion in insects, where were we? Well, in irrigated cotton, we were 330 heat units after cutout. In the rain-fed, we were 866. There were open bowls. Open bowls in the unirrigated rain-fed corners. So what does that look like on yields? Here's the yield monitor data. The greens were above between 12 and 1,400 pounds of lint per acre, and you can see the rain-fed corners out there. Those reds are less than 500 pounds. So the reds all in the middle, scattered in there. These are very really variable fields. There's some sand blows in there, so you could cross these variable fields. You'll see some low yields. And so what did those look like? Here's my zone termination yields. Significant differences if you didn't irrigate the cotton, but no differences in yields if we sprayed or didn't spray. Because those last insects came along when we really had reached the final stage of crop susceptibility, and those bugs were eating things out there, but they were eating fruiting forms that were not contributing to yield. So in our irrigation management zone, insect control termination, we didn't see any differences among spray treatments. But insecticide-wise, if we only sprayed the still susceptible plants, we had a 14% reduction in spray cost. Mr. Wilde did this across his entire farm this year, and he estimates he saved 18% in spray cost, only protecting his irrigated and not spraying the pivot corners. I think it's a very, very good step. It's a very simple step towards site-specific management, and I think if we could combine this with other zone practices, we can moving toward our objectives of site-specific management, using inputs only where they're necessary, but improving efficiencies and good step forward. I think there's lots of economic, environmental, and ecological opportunities here for improving our efficiencies. So we know when to quit, and let's go ahead and start that in a real simple way. I want to acknowledge Cotton Incorporated for funding this project and the folks at Wilde Family Farms, David Wilde, Justin Wilde, Tab Wilde, Paul Harris, just wonderful folks to work with, the crop advisors Dale Wells and Les Goodson, and my hardworking technicians Kamala Neely and Aaron Kelly. Thank you very much.